Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She is the author of the book Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Griffith-Jones.
Very welcome. Happy to be here.
Clearly, there's a lot of anxiety about what's happening in Europe. The Secretary of the Treasury is going to be going over there on Friday for a meeting in Poland with the finance ministers of Europe. He's already urged that European leaders act more forcefully to resolve Europe's escalating debt crisis and saying that they've been behind the curve, which seems to be the case from the beginning. Other ministers are warning of a vicious circle between sovereign debt, bank funding, and negative growth. So where would you peg this crisis at the moment, Stephanie?
I think the Treasury Secretary Geithner is right that governments have been a bit too slow to move forward. But I think also markets have been too fast. I think markets, when they are caught by these waves of pessimism, heard a lot and exaggerate. I think that the problems, of course, in Europe are serious, but markets are overreacting. And governments should move more quickly. I think there are some interesting measures that could be taken. One could think of further declines in interest rates. The ECB actually has some space to lower interest rates. And perhaps most interestingly, one could think about Eurobonds, which is collectively guaranteed European bonds, for example, up to 60% of GDP of the debt of individual countries, guaranteed by all countries, and particularly by Germany and France. And this kind of measure, I think, would stabilize the market.
Well, of course, George Soros has been calling for that for some time, and apparently he's quite concerned. The Germans have not shown, well, they haven't exactly jumped at that proposal. Where does it stand, the Eurobond proposal?
Well, there is, I think, growing support for it. For example, President Barroso has just said that the European Commission is about to come out with concrete proposals. I understand that there are a lot of informal discussions about it. It is actually quite understandable that the Germans are unwilling because it might slightly increase their cost of borrowing and make them have some contingent liabilities, but I think it would be a very efficient way of calming the market and of lowering the cost of borrowing for Greece and other countries. Because in these crises, like in developing country crises, they become unsustainable not so much because levels of debt are high, which is certainly the case in Europe, but also because the interest rate at which the countries have to service that debt becomes unacceptably high. So if you can break that vicious circle, you can actually make the debt sustainable and allow the most important thing, which is for European countries to start growing. And to the extent that they grow, not only will their populations benefit, but the debt becomes more sustainable. So it is actually in the interest of everybody involved, including the bank, to facilitate the solution which allows for growth. And I think this dimension has been actually missing. And very few people like Joseph Stiglitz and Paul Krugman have been stressing the need for growth-oriented policies.
Well, but the opposite, of course, has happened in Greece. And there was apparently a telephone call between the Greek Prime Minister and the French President and the German Chancellor. They're all reassuring the world that Greece is an integral part of the Eurozone, but you know, the choice simply is between an orderly default or a disorderly default. That seems to be the reality. And when you talk about growth, it seems that these austerity programs that are demanded of these countries have the reverse effect.
Exactly. Well, that is one of the problems, is that we have in Europe an imposition by the financial markets, by the IMF and the major credit countries on a number of countries to have austerity packages. You have countries like the UK, which have self-imposed on itself, without pressure from the market, austerity. And then you have countries like Germany, which could perhaps grow more because they certainly have space. And, of course, equally worrying is that in the U.S., you have a very sharp slowdown of growth. So, except for the emerging markets, tendencies reinforce themselves within Europe and globally. And I think this is very bad news.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of the book, Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. So we've got the Treasury Secretary going to a meeting on Friday of the finance ministers. There's a great deal of concern in both the European markets and the global markets that the Greek default, in fact, has been a reality for some time. When we talk about being behind the curve, it does seem that this has been pretty obvious that something like this was going to come for some time and that the situation was unsustainable. Even at this point, after the reassuring words from Angela Merkel and Sarkozy after their conversation with Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou, you still get the impression that Greece is going to default. So how is that going to be managed? Or they can't continue to sort of pretend it's not happening, surely.
No, I think that there will be a number of measures taken. My suspicion is that Greece in the end will not default, certainly not in the next few months or even year. I think that there will be, for example, an acceleration of purchases of bonds by the European Central Bank, which could help lower the spread on Greek debt and on debt of other countries. There may be a more serious discussion of euro bonds, and there may be hopefully a ratification of the expansion of the European facility. My impression is that something like a default would be very negotiated and would be, if it's done cleverly. The key is Greece has a debt reduction that is done in a way that where the major credit countries are standing behind it and where contagion is stopped. The risks are not really so much of a Greek default, but of it spreading to other European countries. And I think that if it can be managed, not talked about so much, I think one of the many mistakes that policymakers have made is to talk so much about the need for haircuts, the possibilities of default, rather than do it over a weekend.
Well, that's what Angela Merkel has been saying, right? She's castigated people for that kind of talk and said that...
Exactly. Although she herself was in the past a little bit guilty of that.
Right.
But I think she's now very clear about the fact. There is this very strong commitment. And, of course, there are a lot of difficulties. But I suspect that there will be a ramping up of measures from Europe. I think one of the problems is that market actors tend to demand certain measures, and then when these are taken, then they demand more. So I think there also needs to be some kind of better coordination between governments and the private sector, because they have a joint interest in this crisis not getting worse. So they should act in a coordinated way. And I think if Germany takes the lead on that and calls, for example, the big banks, the big hedge funds, this could help. And of course, support from the US, support actually from the emerging market, like China, like Brazil, may also be very helpful.
Well, China is apparently, and whether they've offered or they're interested in buying some of the Italian debt.
Yes, and as well as Italian assets.
Well, I think
it's
that's what they're
paradox.
After, isn't it? I mean, they're after the assets, aren't they?
Well, I mean, assets to be privatized, like your company.
Right, yeah.
I think the Chinese are much more interested in that rather than in the debt, although they have, as you say, been buying, for example, Greek debt. I mean, China has no interest in a major recession in Europe. It's a significant market for it, and it may therefore step in to help. That would be, it's a very new feature of the world economy. I mean, this is one source of hope, that, like, where we have a big difference in the 30s, where the majority, the world economy, which was in Europe and the United States, went into crisis. But luckily, at the moment, the emerging markets still, countries are still growing very fast. I mean, they're not completely immune from contagion. But at the moment, they're growing very fast, and so they can continue to provide markets. And they have very large reserves, so they could continue. They can provide also funding if they wish so. For example, we have $4.3 trillion of assets in sovereign wealth funds.
Well, doesn't that strike you, though? It certainly strikes me as a bit of an irony that the emerging economies of China, India, Brazil, etc., are the ones that are bailing out the older ones.
It is an incredible irony, as you say. And another irony is that the developing countries or emerging countries had always asked for an orderly debt restructuring mechanism because they had suffered from crises in the past. And the developed countries didn't want to do that, and a lobbying from their own banks. And, of course, if this mechanism existed for an orderly sorting out, this would have helped now, paradoxically, the European countries. But it's an incredible shift. It's so quick that it's the emerging countries that are doing well, and it's the advanced countries that are in trouble. I think it's partly because the developing countries had so many crises in the past, and they learned the lessons that, for example, prudential regulation is that limiting the role of the financial sector by prudent regulation is absolutely key to avoid these very costly crises. Whereas in the developed countries, both in Europe and in the United States, there was a feeling that financial markets were very sophisticated and very wise, and therefore that they could be completely liberalized without adequate regulation. And unfortunately, we are now paying the cost of that. So I think one of the lessons looking further down the line of this financial crisis in developed countries is that we again have to re-regulate the financial sector so it does its job, it serves the needs of the real economy and doesn't create problems for the rest of the economy, doesn't undermine.
Well, Stephanie Griffith-Jones, it's hard to imagine how anybody didn't see what happened in 2008, and you've written about it, Time for the Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. That, of course, I would think has made a lot of people in the world, and the sovereign wealth funds and others, pretty leery of Wall Street. And we still have what the percentage of our economy that's in the finance sector has been growing. And Wall Street has been fighting tooth and nail against Dodd-Frank, which is apparently not exactly a tough legislation. So certainly in terms of attitude, I don't get the impression that anybody on Wall Street has been chastened by what's happened.
You're exactly right. I mean, I think that the lobbying from the financial sector is undermining, for example, Dodd-Frank bill, undermining attempts at regulation in Europe. And I think this is very damaging to these economies for two reasons. One is because this could lead to future crises. And secondly, because we need a functioning financial sector that does what it is supposed to do, which is to manage risk and to finance small and medium enterprises, finance long-term investment, provide safe deposits for households, finance mortgages in a sustainable way. And if we do not have it, the West will keep slipping back. These advanced economies will continue slipping back and will have less and less ability to compete with emerging countries and indeed deliver the welfare that people deserve. So it's really a very worrying thing that after these very large crises, the society is not able to regulate the source of the problem, which is in many ways the financial sector.
Well, I think the reasons for that are pretty clear in the unholy nexus between the financial sector and Capitol Hill and our politicians.
Exactly.
I know the American people are fed up with their politicians, but you know the irony is, of course, they vote for them.
Yes, exactly.
Much as they frustrated by them. So again, I'm speaking with economist Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. So what do you make then of the credit rating agency Moody's downgrading the two largest French banks after reviewing their exposure to Greek debt? That's Crédit Agricole and Société Générale. A third bank, BNP Paribas, apparently is being now reviewed for a possible downgrade as well.
I think it was a bit problematic, but the downgrading was actually not too dramatic, and it went down to the same level that Standard & Poor's had. So it's not a major downgrading, I think. It reflects, of course, concern with a quite large exposure to Greece and to the other periphery countries. But I don't think that is just sort of acknowledges reality. I think there is a broader problem with the rating agencies, which is that they are very, as economists say, pro-cyclical, in the sense that they discover what is obvious when it's already happened. And they do not warn of the problems ahead of time. So I think there is also some need to regulate the rating agencies and to make them improve their methodology so they warn us of problems when they are accumulating and not accentuate crises in the bad times.
So just in closing then, just to get a sense of the word crisis is used all the time. So is it a crisis? Will it be a crisis? Are we being Cassandras, or how much are the Europeans, you know, not being proactive? Because that's been the critique, and it was just delivered by the Treasury Secretary, that the Europeans have been behind the curve. So where's the confidence that if the Eurobond solution, which is the one that George Soros and others have been calling for some time, if that's starting to get some traction, how quickly can they get their act together and just stop this hemorrhaging and pounding the markets? Because, you know, the markets smell blood and they go crazy.
Exactly. But I think these European leaders have taken more actions than have been given credit for. They tend to act too slowly. If, for example, the kind of actions that are being taken today would have been taken a year ago, I think the crisis wouldn't have spread from Greece and could have been handled. But I think there's a sort of quick learning curve. They have been quite pragmatic, for example, in allowing the ECB, the European Central Bank, to buy bonds. They've even now widened it to buy Italian and Spanish bonds, which I think is positive. And hopefully they can move forward quickly to issue these common Eurobonds. And one feels that European governments, which of course are many governments, much more difficult than for the United States, divided as the U.S. government is between the Congress and the presidency, but there is still only one country. In Europe, in Euroland, you have 17 countries, so it's very difficult to coordinate. But they need to accelerate the level of their action, they say. On the other hand, they have to think about ways of slowing down the market. I think we have too many clever market mechanisms, like short selling and naked short selling, that should perhaps be banned or banned further, so that markets can slow down a little bit. And financial actors should think a little bit medium term, because the European economy is not really that bad. It has many, many strengths. So they should think about long-term fundamentals with many, many advantages, many strengths, and not just the latest item of bad news, which is what they tend to focus on.
Well, that's because they can make money out of short selling. So I think your point's well taken. I thank you so much for joining us, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones.
Great pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who is the Finance Market Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of the book, Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis.
So what did we learn on Background Briefing today? Well, we began with this amazing story that's been broken by Mother Jones, that the Republicans in Pennsylvania, they've got a trifecta there. They control the Senate, the House, and the governorship. And they're planning on changing the Electoral College rules, where, of course, Pennsylvania being a key swing state is vital to the election of the president through the Electoral College. And they are going to change the rules. So instead of it being a winner-take-all, if Obama were to win the state, but as expected, lose in the heavily gerrymandered GOP districts, he would end up with only 8 Electoral College votes to the Republicans' 12. So this is the scheme, or the scam, if you will, that the Republicans are going to change it to a system similar to what 2 states have, Maine and Nebraska. But it will have, whereas it doesn't matter with those small states, it will matter incredibly in terms of the presidential campaign. And it's not inconceivable that now, because they control Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan, other key states as well that are now controlled by the Republican legislatures and the governorships, they could do the same thing. I spoke with Akhil Rita Maris, professor of law and political science at Yale University, and he was very alarmed about this and this new development, and feels that the word should get out because, seriously, this is an unconscionable power grab, and it can only be stopped by sufficient national outrage. Then we talked about the Democratic loss of Anthony Weiner's seat to a Republican, a big upset there. And I spoke with a Democratic strategist, Carl Agnew, who basically said, you know, the Democrats don't have a message. You know, nobody much likes the Republicans or trusts them. But in very simple terms, people expect, they don't expect much, but they know that they will spend less and be more responsible. And they, you know, they don't hear a damn thing from the Democrats. That's the problem. There is no narrative on the Democratic side. And the president, of course, is about to give away a lot of the Democratic strengths, their protection of Social Security and Medicare. So it's a pretty pessimistic assessment of the landscape. And then I spoke with an economist about the Eurozone, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, to try and find out whether the 17 member states can get their act together, because they are clearly behind the curve. It looks like they may be able to come up with some plan to sell euro bonds to stop the bleeding in Greece. There's been the French banks were just downsized, or downgraded, I should say, because of the amount of Greek debt they're holding. So I guess it wasn't totally reassuring, but it wasn't that bleak. I'm Ian Masters. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Spencer Downing and Kim Nassiter. This program is available for podcasts, and you can sign up there at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.